Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
This is LNP 291, called Spinal Cord Injuries, Nursing Liability. Spinal cord injuries cause devastating injuries. Lawsuits may result from the injuries occurred as the result of someone's negligence, such as a fall on an icy sidewalk, or in a healthcare facility, or from a motor vehicle crash. Paralysis from a spinal cord injury causes major emotional, physical, and financial damages. This is Pat Iyer with Iyer's Insights, one of the twice weekly shows of Legal Nurse Podcast. Despite improvements in early recognition and treatment, spinal cord injury remains a devastating event which can produce a severe and permanent disability. Be sure to listen to Charles Fleischer's podcast, which was 254, about how he ended up paralyzed after a car accident and how his life was forever changed. Legal nurse consultants get involved in explaining medical injuries and anatomy to attorneys. Many spinal cord injuries result from the force of a traumatic event, which can then produce compression, rotation, extension, or flexion of the spine. There may be immediate effects of the trauma, or there can be a progressive mechanism which follows the injury. Examples of mechanisms of injury include hypoxia, ischemia, edema, and bleeding, to name a few. The spine and the spinal cord may be subjected to multiple insults, such as trauma or infection or ischemia, hemorrhage, tumor, inflammation, and degeneration. All of these processes can lead to a sudden onset of neurologic symptoms, such as motor weakness, bowel and bladder incontinence, and sensory changes. Prompt recognition of these entities is important to reverse or minimize potential neurologic injury. When problems occur, the causes must be identified and practices adjusted if necessary to prevent them from occurring again. A plan of care is then designed for the individual patient. According to the Pennsylvania Patient Safety Advisory, there are three distinct factors of rapid response preparedness that must be addressed in virtually every clinical point of care. These include rapid access to functioning equipment and up-to-date supplies. Point two, knowledgeable and trained staff to manage the clinical emergency. And point three, after the systems are in place, maintaining a state of readiness to manage a clinical emergency at any time. The legal question to answer is, spinal cord injury is usually not a question of damages, it's a question of liability. A patient arrives in the emergency department with a possible spinal cord injury, or a patient falls in the hospital. One of the first things that nurses must do is to assess the patient and determine if there are any changes from the baseline assessment. Recognition of changes from the baseline are integral in the timely diagnosis of spine injuries. Vital signs monitoring plays a key role. It's important for nurses to follow the pain assessment, such as location, severity, radiation, character of the pain, and relieving factors, and listen to the patient. Neurovascular assessments play an integral role in the assessment of a patient who has had any kind of spinal emergency. Cauda equina syndrome is a dreaded complication of a spinal cord injury that causes devastating injuries to patients. It is rare, fortunately, It affects the bundle of nerve roots, or the cauda equina, which is located at the lower end of the spinal cord. This becomes a surgical emergency. If patients do not get emergent attention, then they have permanent paralysis, impaired bowel or bladder control, and loss of sexual sensation. These are some additional devastating symptoms. The patient can have bladder and or bowel dysfunction, especially urinary retention, causing retained waste or incontinence. Severe or progressive problems in the legs, including loss of altered sensation between the legs, over the buttocks, the inner thighs, and the back of the legs. This is called the saddle area, and the area around the rectum or the feet and heels. The patient can have pain, numbness, or weakness spreading to one or both legs that may cause the person to stumble or have difficulty getting up from a chair. There can be a suspected spinal cord compression with acute neurologic deficits that may be present. Emergent evaluation is needed. The surgeon needs to determine if surgical decompression or radiation therapy is going to be helpful. And there can be a progressive or severe neurologic deficit. A nursing malpractice case may be filed when the warning signs of spinal compression are not detected or reported by the nurse to the appropriate physician, or if the injury could have been prevented. I recall a tragic case I worked on of a young man whose blood was drawn in a clinic. He fainted when he was walking out of the area, fell to the floor, and became paralyzed. In this case, the question was whether the injury could have been prevented by different care after the nurse finished drawing his blood. We ultimately concluded that the fainting was not foreseeable. He did not get up right away, and he looked fine as he was walking out the door. Before I continue, listen up. When I had an opportunity to teach a program on legal issues for ambulatory care nurses, I realized that there was a lot of practice issues that affect nurses who work in clinics, same-day surgery units, office practices, and urgent care centers. I put together a book that will help you analyze cases in those settings. The book is called Safeguard Your Ambulatory Care Practice. This text highlights the legal risks of nurses who work in a wide variety of ambulatory care settings, including clinics, medical offices, telephone triage, and other settings. It focuses on one of the high-risk aspects of medical care, ambulatory care risk management. Order the book at the show notes for this podcast, which you will find at podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. Use the code LISTENED to get a 25% discount when you use the shopping cart. That site again for the podcast is podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. I also worked on cases involving patients who became injured when they were dropped. For example, in one case, the nursing assistant dropped a demented patient while transferring her. They used a hydraulic lift while getting her into a wheelchair. There was a sickening thud as the patient hit the floor. Afraid they would lose their jobs, the aides did not report the incident. The next day, the patient could not move her legs. The daughter came in to visit her mother and demanded an explanation. No one knew what happened. No one talked. No one confessed. The patient's condition worsened and she died. Frustrated by the lack of information and grieving over her loss, the daughter sought a plaintiff attorney's help. Here are some tips about our role helping attorneys with a case of a patient dropped during transfer. This is an all too common scenario in our legal nurse consulting business. I've handled several cases like this. What do you need to know to help an attorney with this type of case? First, what are the damages? A drop during transfer may result in fractured extremities, spinal cord injury, head trauma, and soft tissue injuries. Damages are compounded if the patient is receiving heparin, Coumadin, Lovenox, and other anticoagulants. Is there causation? Can the injuries be tied to an incident? Is there any other plausible explanation for the injuries the patient suffered? What's the liability? Staff are expected, according to the standard of care, to use the appropriate number of people and equipment needed to safely move a patient. A dropped during transfer incident can occur in a number of situations, such as the nurse rolls the patient over in bed without putting up the side rail. The patient's rolled off a stretcher. These types of incidents are rare. It's more common for the patient to be dropped during a transfer from a bed to a chair or a chair to a wheelchair. Or the patient may fall if caregivers fail to assess her handling requirements and or overestimate their physical abilities. Another question to ask is, was there a cover-up? Delay in recognition of the injury worsens the problem. Instead of properly assessing the paralysis in terms of onset, associated symptoms, or ability to bear weight, the staff may medicate the patient with an analgesic. Since the aides did not report the incident, the physical therapy and nursing staff continued to handle the patient, delaying the window of opportunity to reverse the paralysis. Here's what you should expect to see in the way of safety precautions. The staff should aid frail people who are at risk for falls. Keep side rails up when turning patients or while they're sedated. Obtain help to move a patient when there's a risk of the patient being uncooperative, too heavy to manage, or too frail. Make sure there are two people involved in a transfer with a hydraulic lift, three including the patient. One person moves the lift, and one person guides the patient's body. The staff should participate in periodic in-services on safe patient handling techniques. Perform accurate fall risk assessments according to policy. Examine the patient care environment for assistive devices that improve mobility and safety, such as grab bars, handrails, raised toilet seats, lockable wheelchairs, good lighting, low bed heights, and other safety devices. Review the fall alert program to determine if it specifically advises staff and visitors of the patient's risk for falls. Ensure there is a comprehensive clinical and risk evaluation after a fall. And ensure that falls are tracked through the quality improvement program and opportunities for improvement are identified and addressed. Use these points to get a head start. And order your copy of Safeguard Your Ambulatory Care Practice at the show notes for podcast.legalnursebusiness.com and use the code LISTENED to get a 25% discount. I've got a phenomenal resource for you just waiting on legalnursebusiness.com. My online training and books are designed to help LNCs discover ways to strengthen their skills and businesses. Check them out at legalnursebusiness.com. Many of us are lifelong learners who enjoy the chance to keep expanding our knowledge. Just like the Book of the Month Club, LNCEU.com gives you two online trainings each month. We have a yearly payment plan that saves you money compared to paying monthly, and each program is hugely discounted. Look at the options at LNCEU.com. And finally, the LNCAcademy.com is the coaching program I offer to a select number of LNCs. You get my personal attention and mentorship so that you can excel and build a solid foundation for your LNC practice. Get all the details at LNCAcademy.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on LegalNurseBusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at LNCAcademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on LegalNursePodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on LegalNursePodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.